Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I am your host, Eric Christensen. I want to remind you guys, you can certainly subscribe to the email list at reallifepharmacology.com, where I give away a free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. In that PDF, I note some of the most important clinical pearls you'll need to know in clinical practice, as well as some of those things that come up on various board exams and pharmacology classes and so on and so forth. So really kind of a unique resource for any nurse, pharmacist, pharmacy student, med student, anybody taking pharmacology classes or dealing with medications on a day-to-day basis. So go check that out at reallifepharmacology.com. Today I want to get into nicotine patches. So this medication is obviously to replace nicotine and help patients stop smoking. Brand name of nicotine patches, Nicoderm CQ is the one that I've seen used most commonly. With nicotine patches, I think it is important to note that we do have three primary dosage strengths. So we've got a 7 milligram patch, a 14 milligram patch, and a 21 milligram patch. And really, there is a lower end weight restriction, but for most adult patients, they're above that. So if somebody's super low weight, you might want to double check and look that up. But by and large, we look at the number of cigarettes smoked per day and judge our initial dosing off of that in most cases. So obviously there could be a situation clinically where maybe a patient has tried patches in the past and they didn't tolerate the high dose or something. You might start at a lower dose in that type of situation. But going off of the cigarettes smoked per day, if we've got a patient that is smoking 11 or more, we're going to generally go with the 21 milligram patch and start with that. So that's the highest dose there. If it's 10 or less, then we might start with 14 milligrams as far as the patch goes there. And so 10's a good number to kind of remember, and an easy number to remember based upon the number of cigarettes smoked there. So if we got above that, 21 milligrams, below that, 14 milligrams. So with that dosing, how long do we do the dosage form? So usually, or what's approved is 21 milligrams, that dose for 6 weeks. And then we would do 14 milligram patch for a couple weeks, and then the 7 milligram patch for a couple weeks. So kind of a taper down with a longer period of time on the higher dose. Now, if we're starting at that lower dose or the medium dose, 14 milligrams, that's 14 milligrams for 6 weeks and then 7 milligrams for 2 weeks there. So again, that dose is generally, at least initially, going to be based on the number of cigarettes smoked. From a mechanism of action standpoint, obviously we're replacing nicotine. That's our objective, our goal, to replace that nicotine so patients feel they don't need it necessarily through smoking cigarettes. So nicotine itself in the brain essentially binds nicotinic and cholinergic receptors, which can produce a stimulating type effect. And it can also impact kind of the reward center and the limbic system, which that can really fuel, that reward can fuel that addiction to cigarettes, which is why so many patients struggle to come off smoking. Back kind of relating the patch to clinical judgment. So we talked about the number of cigarettes smoked. It's always important to use clinical judgment. If you've got a patient that's experiencing adverse effect, intolerabilities due to a higher dose, obviously we're probably going to reduce that dose. Same thing, if you've got a patient reporting significant withdrawal symptoms, you know, that's a situation where we might escalate the dose and go up. You know, if you started a 14 milligram patch, they're experiencing those withdrawal symptoms, we might bump them up to the 21 milligram patch. And here's a shock to you. Patients maybe don't exactly report exactly how much they're smoking as well. Just like drinking alcohol and other things, we tend to maybe underestimate how much of a negative thing that we're doing. So very important to use that clinical judgment and recognize that patients might not be exactly accurately portraying how much they're doing something or they're smoking in this case. A few other clinical pearls with regard to the patch. So only one at a time. I think that's kind of common sense. This specific patch you cannot cut. So something like a Lidoderm patch for pain, you can cut that type of patch. But Nicoderm replacement patches, nicotine replacement patches, you cannot cut them. Essentially what's going to happen is you're going to lose some of the drug and obviously reduce effectiveness there. You want a non-hairy area, clean area on the body. Usually most patients I've seen do it on the kind of the back of the arm. I have seen some kind of upper chest area, that type of location as well there. Now, wearing the patch, this is something that has definitely come up before in clinical practice. How long do I have to wear this? How long can I wear this patch? So they are intended to be once daily. And really, in most patients, we're going to use them 16 to 24 hours. And probably the two big things that I remember with how long to determine to wear the patch is, are they having adverse effects at night? And specifically, adverse effects like insomnia, vivid dreams. If that's problematic at night, that definitely could be because of nicotine concentrations. So in that situation, we might say, hey, take it off at night. Now, that can be balanced with morning cravings. So if you've got a patient that it's like, yep, I get up. The first thing I do during the day is have my cigarette. That's how I get going. That's how I do my thing. That's a situation where you're probably going to want that nicotine in the body. Because remember, these patches have a slower onset. They're intended to be longer acting nicotine replacement. It's not like a piece of gum. It's not like an inhaler. You're not going to get that quick absorption from a nicotine patch that you would with some other dosage forms that are meant for acute relief. So that's kind of some of the downsides of the patch and the kind of the yin and the yang, the good and the bad, so to speak, is that slow onset. So it's not going to be used for quick relief. And one other downside is throughout the day, if patients have really strong cravings, you can't adjust the dose of the patch. You can't somehow ratchet it up and increase the dose that's being delivered from that patch. And even if you could, that dose would take a while to get ramped up because it takes time for that drug to pass through the skin. So those are definitely some important pearls to think about when we're talking about nicotine patch administration and use of it. Let's wrap up the first section here talking about adverse effects. So I mentioned a couple, insomnia, vivid dreams. If patients are having those, that's probably a candidate that we're likely going to take that patch off at night. Other adverse effects I have seen, have heard of, GI upset, which tends to be obviously a lot more common if you're, you know, doing a nicotine gum or something, because that nicotine is going right into the gut there. With the patch, it is possible, maybe a little less likely. Headache, and then of course, with any topical administration, there is potential for skin reaction. So, you know, keeping that site clean. Obviously not, you know, placing the patch right on the same exact spot over and over and over again. That may lead to some worsening of the irritation issue there. So keep that in mind. Obviously, if somebody's reporting really severe reaction, rash is spreading, it's getting worse, you know, it's painful, it's weeping, it's, you know, other worrisome symptoms, yeah, you got to educate your patients to report those issues to you if they are having problems with that. Maybe something else is going on, infection or whatever. So I think that wraps up adverse effects. We'll take a quick break, then we'll finish up on drug interactions. If you're looking for board certification study material, BCPS, BCGP, ambulatory care, BCMTMS, or NAPLEX material, we've got lots of cool stuff going on at meded101.com/store. You can find links to all the resources we have. Also, uniquely, just released a drug interactions book that I will cover many of the interactions that I'm covering today with regards to nicotine and smoking. So you definitely go check that out. I've got a link to that right on my site at meded101.com/store. In addition, I have just released a new 100-question free NAPLEX practice exam. So definitely go check that out. And you can find the link to RxGrad at meded101.com/store, or you can go straight to rxgrad.com as well. So again, check out those resources, support the sponsor, help keep this podcast free and educational to all those that want and need to learn more about medications and medication safety. All right, let's finish up on drug interactions. So as a whole, nicotine replacement generally doesn't have too many drug interactions. One, cimetidine, that comes to mind. So nicotine can be increased, or concentrations can be increased on account of cimetidine. Varenicline, which is also used for smoking cessation purposes, using that in combination with nicotine. It is a partial nicotine agonist, so it could have additive, potentially, type effects to nicotine replacement therapy, like with nicotine patches. And then one other thing that I guess I think about, it's generally not too much of an issue because patients are already getting nicotine into their system. Their system's, you know, kind of used to it. We're basically just replacing it. We're not trying to go way above and beyond what their normal blood concentration is. However, if we do potentially give them more than they're used to, there is that potential that blood pressure and pulse could go up a little bit. So that is something that I, you know, modestly look out for. And if you've got a patient on multiple blood pressure medications, which seems like many smoking cessation patients are, sometimes on many blood pressure medications, we've got to recognize that, you know, if that nicotine is excessive, we could be opposing some of those effects. So keeping an eye on that blood pressure, keeping an eye on that pulse, just a good thing to do as we're kind of starting and getting that nicotine in our system from nicotine replacement therapy. And then one last interaction while we're finishing up here, I do want to remind you about smoking cessation. So smoking tobacco products has the potential to induce CYP1A2. Okay, it's not an ultra-potent interaction in most situations. However, we could end up with some altered concentrations of certain drugs. So clozapine, olanzapine, a couple of antipsychotics, those concentrations could go up as we stop smoking. Okay, so smoking tobacco products being a CYP1A2 inducer, that's going to kind of lower those concentrations if we were to start smoking, but if we were to take away smoking, that could raise those concentrations. A couple of other medications that come to mind that are CYP1A2 mediated that I do see used out in practice sometimes, duloxetine. So there again, if we stop smoking, we're going to maybe just have the awareness that could shake up the concentrations of some drugs like duloxetine and potentially modestly increase the concentrations we're getting there. So from a clinically significant perspective, in most situations, I doubt it's going to lead to clinically significant results. However, if you've got a patient on an unusually high dose for some reason, or maybe they're taking other medications, you know, that impact CYP1A2, you know, maybe that change in smoking patterns could kind of alter that concentration. So important to think about. And one last one with CYP1A2 is propranolol. So that's one that's broken down through that pathway. We take away that inducer, that smoking cessation inducer. Propranolol concentrations could go up, you know, lead to lower heart rate, lower blood pressure, and things of that nature. So just a few important interactions to think about there. If you've enjoyed the podcast today, found it helpful, do us a huge favor, leave us a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Very appreciative of all of you who have taken the time to do that. If you'd like to reach out to me for suggestions, comments, wondering where you can get more resources, things of that nature, definitely find me at LinkedIn, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCPS, BCGP, or you can find me at reallifepharmacology.com. Hit the contact button, and that will go straight to me. MedEd 101, you can also reach me there as well, where we have a lot of our board certification products as well as our books that have been created as well. So definitely go check out those resources for all different healthcare professionals at MedEd101.com/store. I'm going to sign off for today. Thanks so much for listening. Take care. Have a great rest of your day.